Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Sid Lowe joining us a little later on in the show to look ahead to the imminent return of La Liga. Plus Frank Leboeuf and Craig with us as well. And after last week we saw Frank's terrible impression of a Scotsman, you've got to see Craig's impression and his French accent. It is worth watching extra time for. Be sure to stay tuned for that. We start though in Germany. We're at the semi-final stages of the German Cup. Saarbrücken, fourth tier in German football against Bayer Leverkusen. They have been the fairy tale story so far of this competition. Well, it ended abruptly today. Bayer Leverkusen beaten them by 3-0. Stevie Nicol and Casey Keller with me to reflect on this game. Casey, kind of played out exactly as you would have expected it to.
Well, yeah, you would have totally assumed, by the way, the preparation that both these clubs had. You had Leverkusen, who's 5 games into their season, into this restarted season in a competitive nature, trying to fight for those last Champions League spots. And you have Saarbrücken, who really hasn't played a competitive match in 90-plus days and have had limited training. And you could see in the end that the quality, particularly after Leverkusen got the early goals, that they were up against it. And look, they put a good little fight on at the start of the second half. And then unfortunately, as you do, you open up a little bit. They get hit on the counterattack in the third. And then it was just a matter of Leverkusen, how many they could put on. And fortunately for Saarbrücken, a lot of missed chances, but exactly as you thought it would happen. I know Saarbrücken, great run, great history in getting themselves as the first fourth division team this far, but the Cinderella story came to a crashing end, as we all expected.
As Casey said, it was the timing of the goals as well, Stevie. Any adrenaline that they might build up put pressure on the big team. Those early strikes really just eliminated that.
Yeah, and for those that watched, and myself included, as soon as that first goal went in, the game really was over. For Saarbrücken to have any chance, it really had to be the perfect storm. From the likes of the goalkeeper had to stand on his head, he wasn't able to do that. You know, when you've got no crowd behind you, you talk about motivation, that motivation's gone, and you're up against a team that are just better than you. So there were too many things missing for it to be a perfect storm, and as Casey said, and as you said, you kind of got what was written right on the tin, and that was Leverkusen going through, not just comfortably, but very, very easily.
By Leverkusen then, through to the final tomorrow, the second semi-final, live on ESPN, Bayern Munich taking on Eintracht Frankfurt. This, in theory, should be a tighter game, but remember, just a couple of weeks ago, these two teams met domestically in the league, Bayern winning by 5-2. However, earlier on in the season, we saw Eintracht Frankfurt beat Bayern, didn't we, 5-1. Jan, trying to make a case for his old side yesterday, Stevie, was talking about the fact that, you know, they're safe now. It looks like they will avoid relegation. So that pressure's off, so maybe they can go out and enjoy this game. Are you buying that theory at all?
Absolutely not. I can come up with no other reason that Frankfurt win this than Bayern Munich don't turn up. You know, after that, listen, 5-2, it could have been a lot more than 5, by the way. Try doubling it. So this looks on paper as just not a match at all. It doesn't look like a competition for Bayern. And as I said at the very beginning of this, the only reason Bayern lose here is if for some reason they're listening to people like me talking about how this game is over and it's a Leverkusen-Bayern final. That is the only way Bayern lose this game. Eintracht Frankfurt, yes, they did beat them, but it almost seems like a couple of moons ago they beat them, because they got demolished the last time these two teams played. And I expect the same again.
Casey?
Yeah, I think when you look at the squad size, when you look at the form that Bayern Munich are in right now, also, you know, Eintracht Frankfurt have not looked consistent at all in coming back after the break. And yes, they got a couple results that have kind of maybe just kept them above that relegation dogfight, but then losing to Mainz at the weekend, they're still looking over their shoulder just that little bit. Yeah, I agree that they probably won't go down, but there is a case where they could get roped into it. But Bayern Munich right now are absolutely flying. And with the ability to kind of bring in fresher players with the size of the squad they have, I really see Eintracht Frankfurt struggling in this match. And it's really, and I think Stevie hit it on the head. Only chance that Eintracht Frankfurt have is if Bayern Munich have already are looking forward to the final and for some reason just don't show up. But I don't see that happening with the way that Bayern Munich are playing right now.
Meanwhile, Casey, I was reminded of a name today that we talked about a lot on the show previously, but haven't mentioned for a long, long time. Fabian Johnson leaving Borussia Mönchengladbach. Yeah. It looks like he'll end his contract at the end of the season. This is a guy who was very much heralded as one of the stars of US soccer. Of course, had a great spell, struggling with injuries. MLS, do you think that could be his natural next destination?
I think that's a good question. I think a lot of it will depend on what options Fabian Johnson has. And I know that his time at Gladbach over the last couple of years, he's really been limited to coming off the bench. Where it really looked like for a while there that he was going to take the Bundesliga by storm. And you know, it depends on really what he wants to do. Does he want to bounce around to some lower division clubs or maybe a team that just gets promoted that wants to take a risk? Or is there an option to come to MLS? Good question, and I think we're gonna have to wait and find out. But yeah, kind of a shame the way Fabian's career kind of finished at Gladbach with a little bit of a whimper.
Meanwhile, this is really interesting regarding a penalty miss at the weekend. This is what Niederlechner had to say. He had his penalty saved in the match, and he says, "Usually I hit it to the right corner, but I heard a comment from an opponent because of those damn ghost games. He shouted to the keeper to remember where I always aim at, and that led to me changing my mind. That was a huge mistake. I let myself be influenced by it. I've often been the hero, but today I'm the fool." Stephen, I want to start with you because there's no crowd. Obviously, you can hear the players clearer. Has he got a point? Is this a valid excuse?
No, he's doubled up on being a fool. You know, he said he's a fool for doing what he did. And now he's doubling up by telling us he's a fool as well and telling us why he made a mess here. No, come on. Listen, the only thing you guarantee is when somebody's taking a penalty kick against you, there's two or three in your team doing all kinds to try and put him off, try to get in his ear, making the goalkeepers try to put him off. You try to shout what corner he's going to the goalkeeper. You try to make sure that he hears you when you're shouting to if it was Grobbelaar, I'm saying, Bruce, he goes left. I mean, these are just things that happen every single time a penalty kick's being taken. So the guy's absolutely just trying to pass the buck and not take responsibility.
But isn't the fact that there's no crowd there, what you're saying, it almost surely becomes white noise? As there is no crowd and as there is no support.
Well, I tell you.
Go on, Steve.
No. I tell you what, it's great, isn't it? You know when people score? You know when people score penalties when they're practicing? And then it comes to the game and they mess and everybody says, well, it's completely different when you take it in practice to taking it. Well, I guess what? He couldn't have had a better warm up. Because all the lads are having a go at you and taking the mickey while you try to take a penalty in practice. So you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, but he just said he was just about to hit it, and then the opponent says and it plays in his hand.
I'm not buying it.
You're making stuff up again as usual, Dan Thomas.
What?
If the referee's standing there and one of the players is shouting at him as he's about to kick the ball, don't you think the referee might do something?
No, surely it's not in the referee's remit to say, oh, could you be quiet, please? You've got to let him take the penalty kick. It's got nothing to do with the referee.
Well, put it this way. If a player breaks the rules of the game and putting the player off, do you think the referee will step in?
No.
The answer with that would be, I'll answer it for you, is yes.
No! When have we ever seen a referee say, excuse me, could you please be quiet, John?
So you're not even listening to me. What I said to you was, if a player breaks the rules while somebody's taking a penalty, whatever it may be, then he'll step in. But if they're not breaking the rules, then he won't. So clearly, he's passing the buck again. He's done everything to just rather than turn around and say, look, I made a mess of this. That it was a bad penalty. No. He's trying to blame the situation.
Casey?
Look, sometimes when you're playing in a preseason game and there's not a lot of crowd, and yes, you're hearing those individual voices more than you would in a big stadium with a lot of noise. But personally, don't you think there would be more pressure with 40,000 people in the stadium stepping up to take this penalty, which could kind of help your team avoid relegation, as opposed to an empty stadium with only one person saying, hey, beware, he might go to his left? I mean, yeah, I think he's definitely reaching here on this. And like Stevie said, I think it's just hold your hand up. Keeper made a good save. I should have scored the penalty. It might be crucial at the end of the season, but I don't see how the empty stadium is coming to his rescue on this one.
Boys, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder then, Bayern Munich against Eintracht Frankfurt live on ESPN tomorrow at 2:30 Eastern. And then it is confirmed the match is in the Coppa Italia. Juve taking on AC Milan. That's Friday. That's live on ESPN Plus at 3 p.m. Eastern. 24 hours later, it's Napoli against Inter Milan. Meanwhile, the return of action in Spain is almost upon us. Of course, La Liga returning on Thursday. Just a reminder how things stood before the break. Just 2 points separated Barcelona and Real Madrid at the top of the table. Barca, according to the bookies, odds-on favourite. Real Madrid, meanwhile, at 5-4. Let's welcome Sid Lowe into the show. Sid, let's start, shall we, with Barca, who are top of the table. Because in theory, the break has been good for them because they can get Luis Suarez back.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, look, we're in a very strange situation. As you know, in almost every show, I try very hard not to give any answers. What goes on in football, we don't know. But with this restart, there's even more that we don't know. You know, we don't know how teams are going to respond to the compressed league table. We don't know how they're going to respond to the heat, to the fact that they've been 3 months without playing, to the fact they've got 5 substitutions, all those kind of things. One of the few things we do know is exactly what you just pointed out, that Barcelona have got their best striker back. You know, and obviously Barcelona rely enormously on Messi, but they are a different team with Luis Suarez. They are certainly a more decisive team with Luis Suarez. Even in those games where he perhaps doesn't play a huge part during the game, he tends to get one or two opportunities and take them. He fundamentally actually seems to take the more difficult ones more often than the easy ones. And I think it's really, really important for them. It's going to be difficult, I think, to imagine him playing every game, given that he's come off the back of an injury and given that the fixture list is going to be so compressed. But I think his return is very important indeed.
Does it tip the balance, Sid, completely in Barcelona's favour?
No, I don't know if it does necessarily. I mean, bear in mind that Real Madrid have also got Eden Hazard back. We weren't convinced that he was going to play a particularly big role between when the game's finished and the back end of the season. And so you could argue that both teams have had players return that they weren't necessarily anticipating playing a big part. The same actually is true at Real Madrid with Marco Asensio, who is fit after almost a year out. I think it strengthens Barcelona's position. Of course it does. But I wouldn't go so far as to say it tips the balance. And as I say, there are so many elements of this kind of sprint finish to the line that we don't know about. And by the way, while we look at it as a sprint finish, you know, it's still 11 games for every team. It's quite a long way to go still.
As much as Barcelona gained during the break to have Luis Suarez back, you feel overall, when you compare the two teams, that they had the worst break, given that the stories that were coming out. Obviously, initially, there was all the problems with whether or not the players were going to contribute to the staff. And then we've had this weird situation in which every Barcelona player has been linked to a move to Inter Milan as part of a swap deal with Lautaro Martinez.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is an intangible, isn't it? And we don't know how far it will impact upon them, or what kind of difference it will make. But it, on the face of it, at least, it doesn't feel like something that can possibly help. You know, this hasn't been well managed by Barcelona. The players, and we've seen public examples of this, albeit right at the very start of this whole lockdown process, very public examples of the players being unhappy with the board. Of course, we saw that famous statement now from Leo Messi having a go at them. And it does feel like if that is going to have an impact, it's going to have a negative impact at Barcelona. And yet one of the curious things about Barcelona is that for all of these kind of institutional issues that they've had over the last 2, 3, maybe even 4 years, they've continued to perform on the pitch, at least domestically. But you're absolutely right, in terms of how it was managed and in terms of a probable kind of set of consequences, those are not good ones at all.
You mentioned, meanwhile, for Real Madrid, it's kind of all about Eden Hazard, given that he hasn't exactly hit the ground running after making that big move from Chelsea in the summer. This is that 11-game window, really, to prove his doubters wrong.
Yeah, and of course, if he does play a key part in them winning the league, this will be seen, without any doubt at all, as a hugely successful signing. Even more so, of course, if Real Madrid were to go on and do something in the Champions League, you know, overcome that first leg defeat against Manchester City and continue to progress. He admitted himself, didn't he, Eden Hazard, that he wasn't fully fit when he turned up, and he didn't look fit in truth. I mean, obviously we're talking about footballers, so all of them are reasonably fit, but he looked a little bit overweight, he looked a little bit sluggish, he's had injury problems, where he's been very, very unfortunate with those. And this is a really good opportunity for him now. The signs are from this week of training, in which they've been able to play 11-a-side games for the first time, that he's played really, really well. Real Madrid are making very positive noises. Now, to what extent that is based on what they hope as much as what the reality is, I guess we'll see over the next 10 days or so when Real Madrid play their first two or three games and what kind of shape he's in. But the early signs, at least as far as Hazard are concerned, are really quite positive.
Well, Sir Real Madrid, Sid, going into the return of the league, are you particularly interested in?
Well, I mean, I suppose the really big question from when you look at Real Madrid and what's left is how much of an impact it will have on them that they are not going to play at the Santiago Bernabeu. You know, there are only two teams in Spain's first division who aren't going to play at home. That's Real Madrid and Levante. They're both going to play elsewhere. Real Madrid going to play in the training ground at Valdebebas, which is to the northeast of Madrid. Levante, by the way, are playing 150 kilometres away. In both cases, because their home stadiums are having work done on them. But will that have an impact? Now, obviously, when this whole process began, we felt like the impact might not be that significant because all of these games will be played behind closed doors. It now looks plausible that at least some of these games won't be played entirely behind closed doors. Now, they won't be full houses, but it might be that we get 30% or 40% of the fans into the stadium. And, of course, 30 or 40% into the ground that Madrid are going to be playing in, which holds about 3 or 4,000, I think it is, or 30 or 40% of an 80,000 stadium, is a huge difference. So what looked like it might be a bit of a question mark, but not a huge one, now looks like it might be very significant indeed.
I suppose less supporters to whistle Gareth Bale, that could be a positive for Real Madrid. Meanwhile, you take a look at the rest of the league, and it feels like a world away, wasn't it, when we were sat here at the start of the season talking about Atletico Madrid as real title contenders. They had that magnificent pre-season. We thought, wow, you know, this transition has worked really well. This swashbuckling Atletico side could really push Barca and Real Madrid. Yet you look at the table, look at where they are. They are sixth. With 11 matches remaining, the bookies still have them as odds on to finish in the top four. This is going to be a real test for Simeone, though, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. And in a way, you're right, we look back at last summer, and I think we're all a little quick, and I include myself, by the way, we're all a little quick to get excited. The fact they scored 7 goals past Real Madrid, of course, in that pre-season friendly in the US. The way that João Félix seemed to settle and play very, very well in pre-season, and indeed, actually, in the first couple of league games. But I think deep down, and we did discuss this at the time, we were doubtful how far Atletico Madrid would go down the road of evolving into a different type of team. You know, you described them as swashbuckling. That's not really a word you necessarily associate with Simeone, is it? And I think we all wondered how well this would mesh together, how well it would work, what their identity would be, and whether they would fully embrace that. And as the season has gone on, you know, there's been lots of injury problems, there have been kind of losses of form for key players, but I think also that identity question has kind of underpinned this whole process for Atletico Madrid. Now look, do they have a squad good enough to get that Champions League place? Yes, they do. And they have time. As I say, 11 games is a lot of points still to be played for. But they weren't expecting to be in this position. They were expecting to be competing for the title. And as it is, they're going to have a real battle on their hands to even get a Champions League place for next year. And by the way, they have budgeted for the Champions League next year. If they don't get in it, the impact will be gigantic.
They're, of course, still in it, though, aren't they? Quarter-final stages after that win against Anfield. Just finally, Sid, Spain has been hit extremely hard, and we've seen the measures that were taken over those 2 months. The quarantine had a massive impact right around the country. What is the feeling looking ahead to the return of soccer and these games that we're going to see almost every day?
Well, look, I mean, obviously, I'm reluctant to speak for everybody, and there are some people who are unhappy at the return of football. There are some fans groups, by the way, who are very unhappy because they believe that football shouldn't return without them in the stadiums, that it will feel empty, that it feels like they've been pushed aside yet again, and too often Spanish football has done that. But I think the immense majority of people are very pleased to have it back. I think they're pleased to have something to turn their attention to. I think they're pleased just on a most basic level of all. They like football and they want to watch some football. And so I think there is a lot of welcoming back because of that. I also think there's another element, which is that the return of football, of course, helps to add to that sense of the return of some kind of normality, albeit to start with at least behind closed doors. And I think that goes hand in hand. As you've said, this is a long process. It goes well beyond football. There is a de-escalation of the lockdown happening in Spain now. Different parts of the country are in different phases of that, but we're getting closer and closer to what the government has described as a new normal. And I think so football goes hand in hand with that. And it does help to create that sense, I think, among most people, that actually, yes, things are getting better. And of course, look, football is returning to action at a time when we've seen days go by when there have been zero deaths at all, where the curve on contagious cases has gone down a very, very long way. It's developed much quicker than some of the other European countries. Of course, the situation was very bad. But I do think there is a degree of positivity now about them playing that possibly there wouldn't have been if it hadn't felt like what's happening at kind of, if you like, a societal level wasn't so in step with what's happening at a sporting level. And actually, both things now are starting to get closer, nowhere near there yet, but closer to something more or less resembling normality.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much. Be prepared. You're going to be extraordinarily busy then for the next few weeks. Just to confirm, the first round of matches all kick off on Thursday. It's the Seville derby, Sevilla in action against Real Betis. And in the following days, it's Athletic Bilbao against Atletico Madrid. That game is on the Sunday. Preceding that, on the Saturday night, Mallorca take on Barcelona. Now, it's not just La Liga that's returning. We also see in the return of Italian soccer as well. Coppa Italia details were confirmed today. And we will also see the return of the Serie Awesome podcast. That available now for you to listen to. Meanwhile, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has talked about the characters of players that he wants to bring in to the Manchester United dressing room, saying you have to have a good personality and that you're a professional because one rotten apple in the basket will make the others rotten. So for me, it's about building a team that will reflect me and my coaching staff's personalities and views. Of course, there are standards because we want to win. We are in the business to win. Couple of rotten apples with us now, Frank LaBeouf and Craig Burley. Craig, what do you make of this?
Well, it's not the first time that he's gone down this road, and it's clear that he felt and his staff felt that there were bad apples within the dressing room, or there may still be some, if not one. We kind of know if he's still talking about someone within the dressing room, there's a fair chance it might be the star man in Paul Pogba, who knows. But listen, he's not saying anything that no other manager would be thinking in terms of when they go to your club. The important thing, and Frank knows this, is to have a really good dressing room, is to have really good guys that, yeah, when you have a bad day, you get together as a team, you win as a team, you lose as a team. But it's understandable in a squad of maybe 25 or so. They're all different characters, and you try and bring in the best people, but listen, people change when scenarios change.
But Frank, you need a bit of character, don't you, within the dressing room? You don't want just everyone to be yes sir, no sir.
Of course you need. You need controversy as well, because sometimes, you know, you don't have the right answer and the right decision every time you speak or you do something. You need leaders, so it's why you need characters, and it goes with that. You need ego as well, but in a good way. And you have to find the right chemistry. Something is wrong for me, according to what he said. He said players has to be like me in some ways. I think it's mostly him who has to adapt to the player he has. And that's make a great coach. When you know you have the players, you don't have all the players that you wanted because they were there maybe before you arrived. But you have to make sure that they stick to what you need, and you have to be strong. You need to be a character as well, and to have a character to make sure that they're going to follow you in any case and any tactic that you're going to make and accept your decision. That's the main thing. You don't teach professional football player how to play football. You bring them to a psychological aspect of the game and psychological aspect of mentality, and how you become a great coach.
You don't want robots, Dan, do you? Let's be honest. I mean, you look back to the Ferguson era and all those teams that he built. You know, he was never frightened to go after characters, problematic people that might give him an issue. You look at Roy Keane. Roy Keane, you know, was a hothead as a youngster and, you know, sort of calmed down somewhat on the field, but still had a temperament that was close to boiling over almost every time he went on the field. That's the way Roy was. That's the way Roy performed at his best. You look at Eric Cantona, the Frenchman that he brought in, who was a flawed character, but he was a fantastic footballer. He did it on the field. He had his problem at Crystal Palace when he went flying into the crowd. He was banned for that, rightly so. What did Ferguson do? He stood by him. He managed the situation. He tried to protect him as much as he could because he knew he could deliver on the field. The list goes on. The Schmeichels of this world, you know, big characters in the dressing room, Pallister, you know, all these different people, Paul Ince. So you need, you know, you need a little bit of that about the side. You can't have an all-controlling thing where, you know, you say, right, if somebody's 5 minutes late for training twice in a row, that's just not good enough. You know, at the end of the day, you've got to manage the situation.
And Craig, aren't you in a situation as well as Manchester United at the moment? You can't be too choosy. It's not like the old days. You've got a lot of competition. You can't offer the same sort of experience that you could, as you say, under Fergie. You're way off Liverpool at the top of the table. You want to bring in the best players. Period. That's it, surely. You want to bring in the best players, not the best players who are going to fit and be this angelic sort of personality that Solskjaer's looking for.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, you know, the bottom line here is he's going to have to bring in... listen, if somebody's a complete nightmare, then obviously they're probably not going to go down that route for various reasons. But at the end of the day, you know, every player is passed, is diligently looked into. You know, when Dembele was signing at Barcelona, and I know there's been some issues and some injury issues, they looked at his period at Dortmund and they looked at some problems he had there and the lateness and some other scenarios. But they decided to go ahead with it because they did their homework and thought they could manage the situation. Now, you can agree or disagree whether that's been a success or not. It might be down the line. But at the end of the day, you're right. It's about United plugging the gap to the top. It's about Man United being a powerhouse in Europe again. And that's going to take not only good footballers, clearly, but good characters in the dressing room. Because without both of those scenarios, you're really not going to win a lot.
And he's talking, Frank, as if his tenure at Manchester United has been so successful up to this point, that this is a formula that has worked perfectly for them up to now. Yet, let's face it, if it was another manager at a club of this stature, he wouldn't even be in charge now.
Yes, the thing is, I think he tries to find a reaction from some players because he wants to put the image of Manchester United when they were at their primes and when they were the best team in the world, and he wants to go back to this standard to make sure the players are going to stick to his ideas, and that's I think it's a good thing. You have to be strong. You have to show the strengths of the club as well to make sure that the players who are going to come up, who are still there, is going to follow your path, and it's very important. Otherwise, you're not going to be successful. Of course, Manchester United is not the club it used to be, and for the past, I don't know, 5-6 years, you don't have the result that you want. You don't have even the game that you want. So Solskjaer is trying to find a reaction from the players to make sure they go back to where they were and where they belong, in fact.
Meanwhile, it's been a good week, hasn't it, for Chelsea? It looks like, of course, they've signed Timo Werner. Hayek as well on his way to Stamford Bridge at the start of next season. However, the report suggesting, Craig, they're not done. Kai Havertz, of course, the much lauded Bayer Leverkusen player, very much on their radar, apparently. But is this the sort of player they need?
Well, he's on probably everybody's radar, including Bayern Munich and others. Look, you can't have enough good players. I mean, it would be a statement of intent, you know, if they go out and get arguably one of Europe's most exciting young talents. And again, it fits with the narrative that Chelsea and Lampard are trying to go down. We spoke about it the other day. It's signing players, younger players, with future sell-on value and being able to produce the goods pretty much right away. Look, if they get Timo Werner and it's still an if, he can play wide, he can play through the middle. We know Havertz is flexible as well. He's been playing through the middle as a lone striker recently for Leverkusen and done particularly well. But it would say to me they would be top-heavy in terms of their forward line, but it would be a statement from Abramovich again to say, yeah, we've given you Timo Werner and we're going to also try and go out and get one of the brightest up-and-coming talents in European football. And I think that's a very exciting sign for Chelsea fans. I doubt, though, that they'll be in that race alone.
Frank?
Well, if you have the chance to have that kind of player that you can sign, you know, you should go for it because he represents the future. He represents, of course, the talent and already a maturity in the top level. And Chelsea is going back to it's going mostly for a future, a bright future because of all the young, talented player they have. And Werner, Alves coming on top of the player that they already have is definitely a plus. As Craig explained at first, you don't have enough talented player. It's always good to have a talent like that in your squad.
Dan, you think about it. If they manage to make two signings, that's a big if. You know, you got Werner, you got Havertz, you got Pulisic, you got Tammy Abraham there. Giroud's still there as we speak, but it won't be for very long, you don't think. You've got Hudson-Odoi on the other side. You've got Loftus-Cheek coming back as an attacking midfielder. You've got Mason Mount in there. So it would give him an unbelievable amount of flexibility in terms of what way he wanted to play. And with the personnel in those positions, if he wanted to play with a front three, he could. If he wanted to play with a bit more physicality with Tammy Abraham and a partner, he could. If he wanted to play with Akanji and with two sitting midfielders in there and play a floating number 10 in front, it could be Mount, it could be Kai Havertz. So the flexibility would be amazing. But I tell you what, it would be a front line that would be a heck of a hard to get into the team.
Well, it's a week tomorrow. The Premier League returns. Take a look at the fixtures. It all starts at Aston Villa against Sheffield United, followed by that big game between Manchester City and Arsenal. Well, just a reminder, for more from Frank and Craig, be sure to check out Extra Time, available on our YouTube channel. Just want to remind you that we are right in the heart of the battle of the leagues at the moment. Remember, 8 of our top journos representing their respective league have picked the best team. It is then simulated on FIFA. All of our journos have got massive egos. Jules in particular tweeting out, don't worry, Ligue 1, I've got this. And the league then responding, saying, do us proud. I suppose they don't have much else to do at the moment, do they? That then brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who's been on. I promise you, Extra Time is worth it. Watch it right to the end. This extraordinary French impression from Craig. Till tomorrow. Goodbye. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Frank Leboeuf and Craig Burley with us. Craig, the first question follows on from yesterday's edition, which was talking about if you'd ever worn a kilt. This person asks about this outfit you were wearing. Where was this?
This was the Stade de France in 98, ahead of the opening game against Brazil. It was decided that we would wear kilts, not by us, but by our management. And I think in that photo, we were out trying to see friends and family in the crowd. And then one of them was with Paul Lambert and Scott Gemmell, teammates of mine, Paul from Celtic. So yeah, that was, and I can tell you it was very hot and those kilts are really heavy.
Oh no. Frank, do you want to ask?
I have a question,
yeah,
Dan.
Can you ask
of course, I have a question.
Go on.
Because I have the question that the world has at the edge of their lips. Were you wearing something underneath?
I can't remember.
Oh.
Oh, that's ugly.
Oh. Ugly and sweaty. Right. This is a good question, actually. What's the most distracting thing a fan did or said while you were playing? Craig, said, I can only imagine the things that were said to you.
Well, as you know, I did tell you about one Chelsea fan. I wasn't playing at the time, but he did say to me that he hoped I died just before the game, which was really nice. So that happened. When I signed for Celtic from Chelsea, when Fr- Frank kicked me out a year after he arrived. It was my second game for Celtic. And I've told you this before, Dan. I went over, we were losing at home to Dunfermline. It was the year we won the league, but we lost the first two games. And a fan shouted, "Why don't you bleep off back to Chelsea? You bleep, bleep, bleep." So I've had loads.
Lovely.
I've had loads.
Craig, I always enjoy the story that you tell of the blind supporters who would go and watch Celtic and have commentary and would still abuse you. You were like wondering what they were saying in their ear.
Well, it was Tosh McKinley, my teammate at Celtic. Tosh had a great sense of humour, but he came in one game and Tosh was a left back, a beautiful left foot, and he'd be running up and down this wing. And I think there was a section for the blind just behind the dugout, or the technical area as you call it now. And for those people, they obviously had somebody there who was giving them a commentary through their headsets and stuff. And Tosh came in at half time and I said, I don't know what that guy's commentating on, but those blind people are not half giving me stick every time I run up and down the left-hand side. Which is quite funny.
Those are your own fans as well. Frank, what about you?
Yeah.
Definitely FA Cup game. I don't remember who was in charge. It was Gullit or Viali at the time, but decided to rest me because we had an important game in the weekend, so I was substitute, and I went to warm up. And it was, you know, where in England, north of England, where you have the theme parks. I forgot the name of the
Blackpool.
City.
Blackpool.
Maybe you remember.
Blackpool,
exactly.
I played yes. In the game. So, it was a cup game, Frank.
Yeah. So, and now when I was substitute and I went to warm up, and the little kid asked me to sign his, you know, the little ball that you put up, you know, because of the air you put inside. A balloon, thank you. And so he asked me to sign the balloon. And so I signed the balloon, best wishes. I said, "What's your name?" I don't remember. So I put his name and I signed. And he took a needle and blew it up. And everybody was laughing. And I said, "Well, why did you do that to me?" He said, "I'm a Blackpool fan. Get out of here." I didn't sleep at night.
I've heard, honestly, Dan, I couldn't. Well, Frank's probably got 1,000 stories, but I couldn't repeat what I've heard. And most of it, you know, it happens in the warm-up because the stadium's not quite full, and so therefore you can hear more of the comments. And when you're running side to side to sort of warm up, you get near the edge of the pitch, near the stand, and I can tell you some of the comments, particularly in away games, mostly are unrepeatable.
Just speaking on that, now I spoke to Stephen Casey about this during the show. There was the Oldsmouth player who missed a penalty, and I know both of you took penalties, so I just want to get your take on it. That basically, he said he missed because just as he was about to kick it, an opposition player shouted, "He always goes to the left." And because there was no crowd, he heard it clearly and then mucked up the kick. Can you empathise, Craig, with him at all? Is that just an excuse?
No, because I don't know about Frank, but I sometimes change my mind just before the strike, because sometimes a goalkeeper moves, something might happen, it just triggers a split second, I mean a millisecond change in your mind, and you can, if you can adjust your foot, you can do that. So I do empathize with them, because you would hear that kind of thing and it screws with your mind just for that split second.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree. It can be disturbing, but I was doing like Craig. Well, I was choosing a side, but I was always following the movement of the goalkeeper if the goalkeeper was moving. And sometimes there is kind of a music when he goes to the left too quick, too early. So it means he's going to go to the right, or he's going to go left, right, left, depending on the music and my run. And so I was able to change it as well, but I never heard anything like that, but I guess it would have disturbed me at some point, yeah.
Frank, should Arsenal offer a contract to Thiago Silva, or is he past his peak to play in the Premier League?
Well, he's definitely a fantastic player. We were talking about the character, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wants a real character. He's been criticized a lot in Paris Saint-Germain, and also after the 2014 about the non-character, that the guy is crying very easily, and so it's why maybe Paris Saint-Germain didn't win the Champions League, that he didn't play the first leg in Barcelona, then he was playing for the Remontada. So he's been criticized a lot, and I've never been very nice to him, because I think, for example, Marquinhos is stronger mentally than him. But he's definitely a fantastic player. He's not done yet. He's still in a good shape, and he will fit. He will fit in many, many clubs in the Premier League for sure.
Okay, I'm not sure any of you are guilty of this, but tell us one player you completely wrote off but turned themselves around and made you eat your words. If Stevie was here, he'd remind you that I said that Harry Kane was a one-season wonder. That didn't quite work out. Craig, have you ever been guilty or caught out? I'm trying to think, when we've done the show, I don't think there's anyone in particular that you've had a go at.
I don't think I'm a completely write off a player. Not off the top of my head. I don't think so.
No.
Is the answer. I mean, maybe I've obviously there's been plenty of stick flying around, but I don't know if I've written a player off. I don't know.
Stevie obviously write about Sergio Ramos continuously. Frank, anyone that you didn't rate and then was like, wow?
Well, lately I've been pretty harsh on Jadon Sancho, saying that he should be more mature. Mr. Shaka Islop putting me back on my track, so I even apologize for that. But yeah, not too many people surprised me in a good way when I've been harsh to them. Nobody to mention. Sorry,
Frank. Do you remember a moment where you were very emotional? Your most emotional moment on the field.
It was that FA Cup game that we played against Liverpool at home at Stamford Bridge. We were losing 2-0 half-time. Then Mark Hughes came on and we finally won 4-2. And that it was raining. It was a typical, because the grass wasn't very good, typical English game. And I really felt that I was living kind of my biggest nightmare, being in a very hard game with no possibility to play good football, but in a war, in a way that you can be successful. And I think that I had tears in my eyes at the end of the game, because I was so absolutely fantastic the pressure, the feeling that we had on the field.
Like the perfect storm. Craig, for you?
Well, not emotional in a sense that you would start crying, but I think a sense of relief surrounded some goals. But I think the game that I felt a sense of relief just for a victory was the FA Cup semi-final that Frank and I both played in against Wimbledon at Highbury. And primarily because I had made such a big mistake the year before in the semi-final against Man United at Villa Park, that I felt an enormous pressure going into that game, that I just couldn't afford to make any mistakes. I didn't want to let my teammates down. I didn't want to let the fans down. I didn't want to let myself down. So the feeling of emotion, particularly after Wisey shouted 5 minutes before the game, "No effing back passes today, Burnley." So that put me under more pressure. And I think when we finished that game and we'd won and Gianfranco had scored that fantastic goal just to finish it off, we were in the final. It was a blazing hot day, as Frank will remember. Beautiful day. Great atmosphere at Highbury, and it was just a sense of sort of emotional release at the end of it that I got through that 90 minutes unscathed, unlike the year before. So yeah, big pressure, you know, and you don't realise when you're playing these games, you know, nobody wants to let their teammate down. That's the big thing. And when, you know, we've talked on the show about Solskjaer and the bad apples and all that, you know, nobody wants to let their teammate down, and that was never been more for me than that game at Highbury.
Frank,
very important, Dan. Sorry, Dan. It's very important what he just said about not letting down his teammates. Where that's what I thought when I was playing the final of the World Cup in '98, where you reach the final but you don't play a lot. And suddenly you have the chance to play in the final and you don't want to let your teammates down because you're going to make a mistake. And that's the biggest pressure that you put to yourself. That's maybe wrong, but when you have a character like Craig and I had and you just want to win stuff, that's the pressure that you need to maybe be performant.
Final question. We heard last week Frank do it. Now, can Craig do a French accent?
as Frank did a Scottish one last week.
All right. Help me, Frank.
Bonjour, comment ça va?
Yeah, but
hello,
got to do
comment
it
ça
English,
va?
Yeah, he's got to do it
in English. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, just sound like Frank.
Hamburger. Hamburger. I need to have some hamburger.
Hey, let me think. Ooh, can I have a bottle of beer? I don't know. What we... a wee of frogs. Frog's legs.
Frog legs.
Dos San Miguel, por favor.
That's Spanish.
I know that.
That's Spanish.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you did
that.
I'm
getting that. Me some pasta and putting me a fries on top, like McManaman. That's Italian.
That's so Scottish. There's nothing to do with that.
I know.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you did that.
I'm going to learn French.
Goodness me. Lighting up in your old age. That is it. Thank you very much to Craig and Frank. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Au revoir.